This is Poetry Off the Shelf. I'm Helena de Groot. Today, the sovereign poet. In December of 2009, the United States government issued an apology to Native Americans. If this is the first you've heard of this, you're not alone. Lily Longsoldier, whose father is Lakota, considered herself reasonably well-informed on Native issues. She was teaching at Diné College at the time, the tribal college on Navajo Nation, and she was always looking on Native news sites for interesting articles to discuss with her students. And she hadn't seen or heard anything about an apology. No one did. There had been no ceremony, no public reading, no invitation to Native leaders to watch the signing. There wasn't even a cool-looking document. Congress had simply slipped the apology into the annual budget for the Department of Defense, in between an entry on National Guard counter-drug programs, who would get $15 million next year, and a provision on when and how to publicize the received funds. It was months before word of the apology finally spread.
At that point, I felt a kind of, I almost want to say disappointment, but it wasn't disappointment. It was a kind of outrage, you know.
Yeah. So I'd like to get to the actual document because it's quite a curious text. Mm-hmm. Would you like to read some of the text?
Let's see here. You know, this document is sort of structured in three parts. It begins with 20 whereas statements, 7 resolutions, and 2 disclaimers. So I might read maybe just 2 of the whereas statements.
Great.
One of them says, whereas the arrival of Europeans in North America opened a new chapter in the history of Native peoples.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one. Whereas while establishment of permanent European settlements in North America did stir conflict with nearby Indian tribes, peaceful and mutually beneficial interactions also took place.
Yeah.
Another one is, whereas Native peoples and non-Native settlers engaged in numerous armed conflicts in which, unfortunately, both took innocent lives, including those of women and children. I think, yeah, there's this constant negotiation, sort of ownership of what has happened. And it's like one step forward, but also one step back. It's very carefully drafted.
Yeah. Yeah, but the person who came up with that phrasing that, you know, the arrival of Europeans in North America opened a new chapter in the history of Native peoples. Like,
I mean, that's almost that person the work of a poet, to be quite honest, because it's really exploiting language to its maximum capacity.
Yeah, and like, how much can you not say?
Right.
And that, you know, that word itself, whereas, it's so strange to me. I didn't even know when I started reading this document whether whereas means since, you know, since this happened, since this other thing happened, or if it's more like while, you know, that sort of suggests that there's a contradiction there. Like, while, you know, this happened, we also consider, you know. What did that word mean to you?
I mean, I understand it as setting the stage for the resolutions to follow, some sort of action to take place. However, you know, in this document, there really isn't any.
Yeah, because that resolution, what does it say?
Well, there's 7 of them. Number 4 is interesting. Apologizes on behalf of the people of the United States to all Native peoples for the many instances of violence, maltreatment, and neglect inflicted on Native peoples by citizens of the United States. So I, first of all, it's apologizing on behalf of all the people of the U.S. You know, at the time, I really felt like, well, shouldn't all the people know that you're doing this on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a young student point out, Lakota student, well, I'm also a citizen of the U.S. So that's something to grapple with there as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this very cynical end to an already unsatisfying apology. There's this disclaimer. Nothing in this joint resolution A authorizes or supports any claim against the United States or B serves as a settlement of any claim against the United States. So basically, we're not liable. You can't sue us. We're not going to pay you.
Absolutely. And I think this is really, I think also there was an apology during Clinton's era made to the people of Hawaii, Native Hawaiians, in which they outlined how that land was taken from their queen. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And later on, that document was taken into court. I think there were land issues and some of the lawyers advocating for Hawaiian land rights for the Native people used that apology. And it was in that case, of course, that the federal government decided you cannot use these whereas statements to make a claim. And so, you know, it's no surprise, you know, given that kind of precedent, that they would include disclaimers at the end of this as well.
All right. So, that's interesting. I didn't know that history.
When
you decided to write your response, you wrote a whole series of poems, also starting with that word, whereas. What started happening as you took that word from its legal context and you use it as the start of a poem?
Well, yeah, I think also for myself, I found myself sort of building a platform or a foundation for my right. I mean, I'm really not anyone significant as far as like the bigger workings of things, you know. I'm just a person.
Mm-hmm.
But using that language myself, it helped me establish a sovereignty and a voice to respond to this document. I have every right to. This is what I have lived. This is what I see. This is what happens now. I mean, that was a big part also of the response to the apology, is I wanted all of those pieces to come from living memory. So within my generation or my dad's generation, I didn't want to jump back 100, 200 years in history. I wanted to say, these are the details. These are some of the specifics of what it is to be, you know, a Native person living now. I think I just went on a tangent just now, but...
But it's lovely that you say that, that you wanted to take that language and apply it to the thing that you are a sovereign about, you know, your own life, your lived experience that you absolutely know. And so I was wondering if you could... get to a poem where you do that so ingeniously. It's that one on page 72.
Okay. Let's see. Oh. This is a funny one. Whereas a string bean blue-eyed man leans back into a swig of beer, work-weary lips at the dark bottle, keeping cool in short sleeves and khakis, he enters the discussion. Whereas his wrist loose at the bottleneck, he comes across as candid. Well, at least there was an apology. That's all I can say, he offers to the circle, each of them scholarly. Whereas, under starlight, the fireflies wink across East Coast grass. I sit there painful in my silence, glued to a bench in the midst of the American casual. whereas a subtle electricity in that low purple light, I felt their eyes on my face gauging a reaction. And someone's discomfort leaks out in a well-stated, hmm. Whereas, like a bird darting from an oncoming semi, my mind races to the apology's assertion. Quote, while the establishment of permanent European settlements in North America did stir conflict with nearby Indian tribes, peaceful and mutually beneficial interactions also took place. Whereas I cross my arms and raise a curled hand to my mouth, as if thinking, as if taking it in, I allow a static quiet, then choose to stand up, excusing myself. I leave them to unease. Whereas I drive down the road replaying the get-together, how a man and his beer bottle stated their peace, and I reel at what I could have said or done better. Whereas I could have, but didn't, broach the subject of genocide, the absence of this term from the apology, and its rephrasing as, quote, conflict, for example. Whereas since the moment had passed, I accept what's done, and the knife of my conscience slices with bone clean self-honesty. Whereas, in a stirred conflict between settlers and an Indian that night in a circle. Whereas I struggle to confess that I didn't want to explain anything. Whereas, truthfully, I wished most to kick the legs of that man's chair out from under him. Whereas, to watch him fall backward, legs flailing, beer stench across his chest. Whereas, I pictured it happening in cinematic slow motion, delightful. Whereas the curled hand I raised to my mouth was a sign of indecision. Whereas I could have done it, but I didn't. Whereas I can admit this also took place, yes, at least. Yeah. That's it.
There's so many great parts about this poem. I mean, when I first read In the Midst of the American Casual, I almost leapt off my seat. it's really well observed, you know.
Mm-hmm. And how is that? I mean, how do you relate to that or understand it?
Well, you know, I'm from Northern Europe, and And there's no such a thing as sort of a culture of being casual.
I'm certainly not dismissing that. It's good to sit and just talk and relax and be together. But there are times when, you know, these things come up and I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling so casual. I'm not feeling so easygoing. You know, and I think I tend to be, I'm not always, but sometimes more reserved. And I hate to say it, but I'm not a quick thinker. I don't, I'm not so quick on my feet. It takes me time to put language together, to put the words together, to respond quickly. And, you know, and especially if you're, for example, the only native in a setting like uh-huh. this, and these subjects come up, sometimes you just don't even have words. You just want to kick that person's chair back, if we want to get honest, you know? It's just like, it's exhausting. It's tiring.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to do that, of course, but I can write about it.
Yeah, you were raised speaking English, which is your mother tongue. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, like the language that your mother speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's the language of that congressional apology.
Mm-hmm.
While Lakota is the language of your dad, the language that mm-hmm. came close to being erased and the language that you didn't start learning until later.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering... I can't imagine it, but I was wondering if inside of you, if there lives a suspicion about English and about what it carries.
You know, I mean, there's a kind of utility in the English language. You know, that's where I center it emotionally. It's the utility mm-hmm. of it. I'm not sure how to respond to the idea of suspicion.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I do think that with Lakota language, where I'm not fluent, I'm learning. Mm-hmm. I have a long... I don't know if I'll ever be fluent. But... the one thing about Lakota language that I think functions differently than English for me is mm-hmm. I have really found that it's through our language itself, through language, that I can most closely understand what it is to be a Lakota person. There's so much knowledge contained within the language, and knowledge that relates to the land, our relationship. It's about relationship, our relationship to the world around us, to land. For example, I've used this many times, and I've heard other people use this example, is like our word for child. So the word for child is wakanaja, and waka means like holy or sacred. So every time you are saying child in our language... you're, in essence, calling them a sacred being.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's so beautiful, right? Isn't that? That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I love that example because it says right away, like, the Lakota view towards children, also the role that they have in the community, mm-hmm. the regard that they have. I often understand it as space, too. Like, let's say when you go to a sacred place, right? Some place that is mm-hmm. holy or sacred to you. You're very mindful about what you say, how you behave. And I see that even with children, right? We're very mindful about what we say and do around them. There's a space around them that is to be respected.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you have a daughter too, right?
I do, yes.
How old is she?
13, and she's almost taller than me.
Oh, wow. I know that my mom baked us a pie when my sister and I, when we were taller than she was.
Oh, did she? Oh, that's beautiful.
So what's it like to learn Lakota together with your daughter?
Oh, it's funny because she's actually really good with it.
Oh, great.
She's like,
she's taller than you and she's better at Lakota than you.
Yeah, she's way better. And I think part of it is because she's also on her dad's side. She's Diné. So she's Navajo. Mm-hmm. And there are some sounds in Lakota language that are sometimes difficult, but she's used to using them in Diné language as well. And so I just get a kick out of it because I'm so slow, and she's really good with it.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take classes? Is it from a book? Is it from videos? Like, how do you learn?
Well, because I don't live on Pine Ridge, we learn, me and my daughter, in whatever way we can, you know, from local friends who speak the language. You know, if we meet Lakota people, you know, there's also immersion. There's a language camp every summer.
Oh, wow.
I also ask my family whenever I want to know how to say something, I'll text or call and ask them. So it's slow. Yeah. It's slow going. And as I said, I do make a lot of mistakes. I feel very humbled by that. So, you know, it's just something to treat with care because it's such special language that I don't want to explain it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to speak out of place.
Yeah, of course. But, I totally get that. Yeah. You know, when you don't feel like you're the expert, it's like what you were saying before, right? You only want to be sovereign about the things that you absolutely have expertise on, like your own life.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so you told me about summer camp and you said that it was like an immersive camp. Should I imagine that everyone around you all the time speaks Lakota and that you just have to plunge and swim? Or is it not that intense?
It's not quite that intense, no. There is English used to explain syntax or grammar, things like that. But there are ways in which I remember one of the teachers saying, there are times when we cannot translate. You have to think. Yeah. You have to think in Lakota.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you about this immersion thing, you know, because, you know, dictionaries and classes and going to English and stuff, that's useful up to a point, of course, you know. But at some point, it is like what you said earlier, it's about the relationship with the world around you, right? Unmediated by English.
Right, exactly. I mean, I have to say, like, even sometimes, like, I hear my dad talk to some of our relatives in Lakota language. It's like, I don't understand most of what he's saying. I'll pick up on a few words and phrases, right? But even just listening, there is a feeling. There is, I feel differently surrounded by their voices and our language. I cannot explain it, but it is not what I feel right now. Talking to you, for example, in English, you know, like, and so it, having this textbook Lakota is not really, it's not enough.
I'd love to get to a poem that is sort of about that. It's that poem on page 74.
You know what? This is this poem really is. It's exactly about that. Because I was using our dictionaries, trying to write this piece about being tired, and I relied on this really old dictionary. I wrote this piece. I think I even published the first version of this piece. And then I had this nagging feeling like, oh man, I feel like I should call my dad just to make sure. And then it turns out the phrase I got from this book was completely not the way that we say it. So yeah, this is a great example of what I was talking about.
Wow. And why was the dictionary wrong, you think?
Well, if I can be honest, I feel like I have to be so careful with what I say because I don't want to get anybody into trouble or stir things up. But when I told my dad the word that I had gotten from the dictionary, his first question was, who wrote that dictionary? That was his first question. That, I think, is really like Lakota way of doing things. Like, it's all about relationships. So they want to know who, what, where right away.
Yeah.
And so I looked to the front and I read him the name. He said, oh, I know that guy. He's this old missionary guy. And he said, I bet you he adapted that from Dakota, not Lakota. And I looked, and it's somewhere in the opening of the book, and my dad was right. He knew right away. And he said, I remember that guy. He said, I don't even think he knows what he was talking about.
So amazing.
And that, too, is what really made an impression upon me. That really our experts are the speakers. That's it. At least me personally, that is who I trust.
Mm-hmm.
And all the materials, all the dictionaries, those are sort of like resources you can turn to.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sure.
They're not the authority.
The final word.
Yeah. No, yeah. They are not. Those things are not the authority on our language for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to
get to the pump? Yeah, please. I'd love that.
Whereas, before I start this poem, I do have to say that there is a word, Lakota word, blugro, and I am not very good at pronouncing it correctly. So again, to my Lakota friends, please forgive me, because my dad tried to get me to say this word like 10 times in a row, and he finally gave up and said, well, just keep practicing. So it's the G. The G is a heart. It's like in the throat. But anyway.
Uh-huh.
Whereas I tire of my effort to match the effort of the statement, quote, whereas Native peoples and non-Native settlers engaged in numerous armed conflicts in which, unfortunately, both took innocent lives, including those of women and children. I tire of engaging in numerous conflicts, tire of the word both, both as a woman and a child of that whereas, both of words and wordplay hunching over dictionaries, tire of understanding weary, weakened, exhausted, reduced in strength from labor, bored. In a Lakota dictionary, tired is watuha, the dictionary claims. Under this entry, I find the term watuhaya, meaning to exhaust somebody or something. For example, to tire a horse by not knowing how properly to handle it. Am I watuha or do I watuhaya? I call my dad to ask, and I also apologize for the pronunciation of those words too. I'm trying. And I call my dad to ask and double check my findings. How do I say tired? He responds, blugo. If you want to say really tired, it's lila blugo. This is my family's way, the Oglala way, to say tired. And who knows better what tired is than the people? How much must I labor to signify what's real? Really, I am 5 feet 10 inches. Really, I sleep on the right side of the bed. Really, I wake after 8 hours and my eyes hang as slate gray squares. Really, I am Blugol. Really, I climb the backs of languages, ride them into exhaustion. Maybe I pull the reins when I mean go. Maybe kick their sides when I want down. Does it matter? I'm Lila Blugol. Stuck. I want off. let loose from the impulse to note. Beware, a horse isn't a reference to my heritage.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
That end makes me laugh. Beware, a horse isn't a reference to my heritage. You do that a lot in your poetry, you know, just sort of subtly undermine the sentimental image that non-Native Americans create of Native Americans, you know?
I had to get that in there before I ended it, right? Well, one thing I do want to say, though, is, and this is something I've been talking to some of my students about, I think that, for example, this book that addresses that apology, so I feel like that's work that I would say it addresses an issue. I think there's ways in which we work where we address things, right? But I think that it's also very important to make work that nourishes us. Nourishes our community or our families or what have you, to engage in conversations that has nothing to do with the non-Native gaze.
Yeah.
And so what I mean to say is there's other works that I do that are not necessarily in whereas, but where I'm interested in our language, you know, or I'm interested in historical arts and things like that, certain practices, where I myself am learning and I'm talking to others, and I feel like it's a reciprocal kind of work where I get as much out of it as I put into it. And I think that's very important. It's very important for us to remember to nourish ourselves in that way. I don't know, this might be going too far, but sometimes I feel like whereas has been widely read and received partly because others are implicated. So they're kind of picking up the book saying, what am I going to see in myself?
Yeah.
Right? But I don't feel obligated to always make work like that where I'm implicating others.
Right.
There are so many other ways to work that is not about constantly looking in the direction of historical trauma. You know, others. I mean, there's so many other concerns that, you know, our people have, things that we're thinking about culturally and so on, that I'm very grateful to be a part of sometimes. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love what you're saying now, because it makes me think again back to what you were talking about, you know, what are we the experts on?
Mm-hmm.
When are we the authority?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, how wonderful it is to not be the expert. How wonderful it is to learn from others and to be embedded in a network of people who know better, you know?
That's right.
It's great.
Yeah, I think to learn from others and to collaborate, and to offer your little piece, right?
Yeah.
But the spotlight is not all on me. It's about us, right? Together.
Lily Long Soldier is the author of the chapbook Chromosomery and the full-length collection Whereas, which won the Penn Book Award, the National Book Critics Circle Award, and was a finalist for the National Book Award. She was awarded a National Artist Fellowship from the Native Arts and Cultures Foundation, a Lannan Literary Fellowship for Poetry, a Whiting Writers Award, and she has taught at Dene College and the University of Iowa. Today, she lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico with her daughter while being on the faculty of the Low-Res MFA program at Randolph College in Virginia. To find out more about her work,
check out the Poetry Foundation website. The music in this episode is by Todd Sikafoos. I'm Helena de Groot, and this was Poetry Off the Shelf. Thank you for listening.